Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
Good evening, yeah, and I'm Leo. And tonight we have an interview with Ask Me Union Public Relations Coordinator, Larry Dorman.
For Council 4 here in Connecticut, and he's going to comment on union issues and the health care bill and other stuff that we talked about. So it was a really good interview, and Larry's always fun to talk to. He's a great guy and brings us the union perspective on things. So I think you'll find that informative. In the meantime, we'll bring you some quick news in just a second as we pull it up here. We want to have some timely stuff.
One-child policy, case for killing Junior.
This is from, I'm not sure what this is from.
Let's see, where was this from? It's a...
It says six questions to help. That's an ad.
Let's see where this was.
We got this off the David Icke site. Let's put it that way.
There's no... And Mo Bedard. I don't know. So I can't even tell what the name of this website is.
Anyway, aside from the most...
He's got a Bank of America banner on the top of it, but I don't
know. Aside from the most important environmental issues, population control has also been discussed at the Copenhagen Climate Summit. More and more governments are looking into a policy similar to that of China, a policy according to which a family is only allowed to have one child as a possible solution to problems such as overpopulation. We do not hear too much about China here in the States and reports on this one-child policy, so I thought I would provide you all with some research, links, and facts, and the cold reality of how China treats humans. In 1994, the Utah Telegraph, an article reported the truth. China's one-child policy spawned secret slaughter. Vast exercise in social engineering provides lethal to millions of girls and puts the population out of balance. Millions of baby girls are believed to have been quietly put to death in China as a result of its rigid one-child policy of population control. In male-dominated rural areas, the pressure to have a son is so strong that girls often disappear shortly after birth, giving parents another chance to ensure their only child is a boy. Now, peasant tradition has found a modern reinforcement, prenatal scanning. In one rural township where parents have been able to discover the sex of their children in the womb, more than three boys are being born for every two girls. The Communist Party Committee in Zhejiang, in the northern province of Shandong, has warned that officials who have used scanning to detect and abort female babies will be stripped of their posts and membership. Obtaining evidence of this secret slaughter has never been easy except for the growing disparity in population statistics. This week, I reported China was in Copenhagen, Denmark, with a mission to push their one-child policy on the world. China defended its family planning policy as a way to reduce global warming. According to Beijing, its one-child and birth control policies, which include forced abortions and sterilizations on unwilling women, are part of its global strategy to fight climate problems and should be adopted by the international community. Population controls can save the environment, and the international community should adopt China's one-child policy with that objective in mind, Chinese government sources said. The head of China's delegation to the UN Conference on Climate in Danish capital urged U.S. President Barack Obama to cut greenhouse gases. European leaders pulled an all-nighter to reach a deal on helping developing countries fight global warming. The 6 billion euros, 9 billion in American dollars aid package would be spread over 3 years. Keep in mind that China is a communist country, and this baby-killing advice is coming from a land where pollution kills 750,000, is that what it says, in China every year. Apparently, carbon-emitting and polluting factories that produce toys and clothes for the world and slave factories are more valued than human lives.
Pollution kills 750,000 people in China every year, according to previously released World Bank statistics.
Unreleased.
Oh, unreleased, okay. And the figure is also twice previous estimates. Almost twice previous estimates were calculated using a new statistical model, but they have been suppressed until now because the government feared they would cause social unrest, according to reports. I assume in China it's easier to find a willing doctor to perform abortions than it is to be a mayor of a city. Wanted mayor for pollution, for polluted China city. So there's a warrant out for a mayor.
Maybe they're trying to get him to run for office. Wanted mayor for polluted China city.
A city in northern China, notorious for its pollution and deadly mining accidents, is having trouble finding willing candidates for mayor and Communist Party chief, state media reported Wednesday. The two top posts have been vacant since September, and Linfen, regularly cited as one of China's most polluted cities, when their former occupants were sacked over a mining disaster that killed 270 people, the China Daily said. So has their one child policy, and took the only way at polluting
and look the other way at polluting factories worked.
Well, if you consider human rights violations, corruption, and baby soup just part of the baby killing business, then I guess yes. Later, the BBC wrote an article titled "Has China One Child Policy Worked?" But there is more sinister aspect to this policy, which is sometimes employed to make women less willing than Ms. Zhao accept the rules. Activist Chen Guangqing was sent to prison last year for exposing that he says were overzealous health workers in Linyi City. He says they illegally forced women to have late-term abortions and be sterilized. And listening to these clowns is like telling your children to listen to Ted Bundy, Charles Manson, and Richard Ramirez, and give them tips on how to kill straight from death row. It just does not make moral sense to me.
Yesterday, I reported on the inhuman act of using aborted human fetuses in soup and other Chinese dishes that is currently accepted
and legal in China.
Dead babies can be purchased in Taiwan for $70 for being used as grilled delicacies.
Oh, this doesn't make sense.
I don't believe this.
It is grilled delicacies, says Seoul Times. The email report received by the Seoul Times confirms that news with several vivid and appalling pictures of human embryos, fetuses, being made into a soup for human consumption. Oh, God. And the report went on. A town in the south province of Canton is now on trend taking baby herbal soup to increase overall health and stamina and the power of sexual performance in particular. Oh, my God. But apparently, to others who live in what appear to be civilized societies, are recommending that we adopt China's one-child policy. Who in the West wants to bring the people under China's forced abortion one-child policy? Well, let's take a look.
According to Diane Francis, a Canadian journalist who is recommending such measures, the world population would reduce from 6.5 billion to 3.43 billion by 2075. She called it an inconvenient truth that we all need to accept and called kids carbon-emitting units. However, there is one inconvenient truth that she forgot to mention in her baby-killing article. Canadian journalist Diane Francis has two kids, excuse me, readers, carbon-emitting units. Herself, it gets worse, folks. Her sister also has two carbon-emitting, polluting little units, a.k.a. children. Is Diane Francis a lying hypocrite? She is not the only one who sees population control as a partial solution. Several alleged experts see population control as an alternative to technologies which have lower emissions of carbon dioxide as the main focus. They appear to be using China as a scientific role model of what can be done by forced abortions and imprisoning people for having more than one child. Britain's Optimum Population Trust put together a study called Reducing Future Carbon Emissions by Investing in Family Planning, which analyzed carbon dioxide emissions as well as population control as two potential solutions to the environmental problems our planet is or willing to be confronted with. The study, considered cynical by quite a few people, analyzes things from the two perspectives. The costs associated with technologies which reduce carbon dioxide emissions on the one hand, and population control is a measure of gradually reducing the planet's population, less people who emit carbon dioxide, less carbon dioxide emissions. This is the part most people find extremely cynical. On the other hand, the conclusion of this study, the cost/benefit analysis found that family planning is considerably cheaper than many low-carbon technologies. If you visit their website, they even have a human population ticker that supposedly measures world population growth, and then under this ticker it says, world population is projected to rise today from today's 6.8 billion to 9.5 billion in 2050. The world population clock is ticking. We are rapidly destabilizing our climate and destroying the natural world on which we depend for the future. In other words, killing unborn babies and forced abortions are cheaper than cleaning up factories. The case for killing Junior has just begun, and I'm afraid the ruling class, who control every facet of our society, are hell-bent on leading the West down this hellish path. Apparently, they are bad shepherds, and we are the sheep.
So, you know what's interesting, folks, is that if you go to global...
Tell us who this person is. Let me just see.
I already said who it was.
I just want to see who is. The guy who wrote this says he's the founder of LoanSafe.org, LoanWork.org, and CEO of MoCo Incorporated. He's been featured in the New York Times, LA Times, and Fox Business, and many other media publications. My goal is to help people with my websites and restore hope through the Internet. I was born and raised in Southern California.
Use cash. Big banking is out of control. Many corporate financial institutions considered too big to fail receive a share of $1 trillion of taxpayer money. To thank us, they are hiking interest rates on existing credit card debt, lowering and canceling small business credit lines, and imposing more and higher fees and penalties with impunity. As taxpayers, workers, citizens, and merchants, we can fight back, not with letters to the editor, nor with calls to our government representatives. There is an easy, immediate, and direct path toward banking and monetary reform that benefits people, not corporations, through everyday transactions in the marketplace. Use cash. Did I do it? Today, one of the biggest money makers for big banking is cash substitution services, credit and debit cards. Users of debit and credit cards pay for the convenience these cards provide through fees, penalties, and interest. Merchants pay fees that average about $3.50 for every $100, plus the cost of those days they wait to be reimbursed by the banks. And they pass these fees on.
Good. To their customers in the form of higher prices. The purchaser pays the fee whether they know it or not. So every plastic payment is like getting money from an ATM that charges you 3.5%. It's this simple. The more times we use cash instead of plastic, we will be wielding the power of the market to deprive banks and financial institutions of the profits that purchase the influence and power that has corrupted our financial and monetary system. Together we can change the balance of power by doing just two things. Use cash instead of plastic, and enlist others to do the same with simple action.
I like that. What do you think?
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah, if you can. Sometimes they won't take cash.
Oh, they do.
Well, not when you rent a car or
everyday purchases.
Or an airline.
Well, that's exceptions.
But still. This is Use Cash is the name of this website. Use Cash. And inconvenient question to Al Gore. It's only 54 seconds on here. Journalist Flynn L. McClure asked Al Gore some inconvenient questions.
You've repeated to say the oldest climate yet email is 10 years old. It's actually 2 months. Will you correct the record?
We're not doing interviews right now. Mr. Gore. Mr. Gore, would you correct the record? We're not doing interviews right now. The security guard pulled a cable from McClure's microphone. So now you're just watching video, but Gore is being ushered out the door and McClure is trying to...
This is what they did to my microphone. It seems you're not allowed to ask inconvenient questions of Al Gore.
This is at the United Nations. Not evil, just wrong is the website. Check that out. That's cute.
Not allowed to ask him questions?
No. Thin blue wine. Petulant police demand impunity. Known to many people in his neighborhood as a gentle and talented man, successful musician and artist before the onset of his mental illness, Chase was beaten so severely by the bold and valiant guardians of the public that nearly all of his ribs were fractured. Several of them had been pulverized. He was also treated to a dose of, from law enforcement's favorite non-lethal toy, the portable electroshock torture device commonly called a taser. See what happened to this poor guy. Violence is unpredictable, chaotic, and thoughtless. It is nature, observed Peter Taylor in a recent op-ed column published in the Oregonian. It doesn't like to be confined and doesn't lend itself to cooperation. It is saddening to see the effects of violence on its victims, though who witness it, and yes, also those who willed it against others. As the final cause in that sentence suggests, Taylor's point is not to sympathize with victims of unpredictable chaos and thoughtless violence, but rather to defend those who often employ it. Taylor is an officer with the Poland Police Bureau, and his column was intended to explain why he, along with several hundred others, took part in a protest march and rally outside Portland City Hall in defense of Officer Chris Humphreys. Along with his comrades, Officer Taylor wore a customized T-shirt containing the slogan, "I am Chris Humphreys." He used the same rallying cry to wrap up his op-ed column, and like his comrades, Taylor either through invincible innate ignorance or as a result blindness induced through cult-like devotion to his professional clique, there are no mutually exclusive possibilities, and cannot understand that this description is an indictment.
Seems to be different from what we just read.
I know, isn't it?
Doesn't really match.
It's the same thing, but it's a thin blue, white, petulant, whatever. Same one. But anyway, two adult police officers should be able to handle a 12-year-old girl, even one who weighs 150 pounds, most of it bad attitude. "I don't care how big she is," commented retired police officer Mike Davis, a 30-year veteran of two grown men using proper holes, should be able to subdue her and get her into a police car without incident. And Davis, who now works for a fitness company, believes the episode of this sort are the inevitable product that results from adding less lethal toys to the arsenal of physical... And this goes on, but, you know, what it is it's a long article on police brutality, and... Yeah, you might want to check this out on lourockwell.com. Interesting. Yeah, he's got interesting articles.
Mm-hmm.
People of Hawaii pass resolution against forced vaccination. Wire it up.
I'd like to go to the next one.
Full signal. Tune into truth about cell phones. Normally, I always stay away from, it's called AT&T tumor.
AT and tumor.
Oh, ATN tumor.
Normally, I stay away from scary movies, but I couldn't resist going to the world premiere of a terrifying documentary called Full Signal last week at the Santa Fe Film Festival. No blood, no gore, just the electrifying truth. There are an estimated 4 billion cell phone users around the world, and the number is rapidly increasing. To give us the kind of connection we all crave, thousands and thousands of cell phone towers and antennas have been built, and a filmmaker, Talal Jabari, documents hidden from view on rooftops and behind trees, disguised as chimneys and church spires, and kept as far under the radar, regulatory radar, as possible. The problem is the electromagnetic field created by all this constant connectivity disrupt our own normal cell activity and wind up making some of us very sick. Can you hear me? Cancer, Alzheimer's, brain tumors, autism, fertility impairment, hormone disruption, the list of health problems to EMF exposure and documented in Full Signal goes on and on locally and globally, with more and more scientists, researchers, and citizens activists around the world sounding the alarm. Let's see.
Prolonged exposure to radio
frequency,
okay,
and microwave radiation from cell phones, cordless phones, cell towers, and Wi-Fi and other technologies have been linked to interference with short-term memory and concentration, sleep disruption, headaches, dizziness, fatigue, immune disruption, skin rashes, changes in cardio function, says Dr. Martin Blank on the highly regarded website
bioinitiative.org, one of many websites you can contact via the FullSignalMovie.org site. The scary part is how we tune it all out, because we love our cell phones and wouldn't know how to live without them. In certain ways, through email, social networking, small screen viewing, your mobile devices create your world. In other ways, they can destroy it and your well-being by overcooking your innards until some part of your body, brain, or behavior breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
AT&T, we have a problem. Meltdown effect of wireless technology on your well-being depends on your individual sensitivity and your exposure level. I'm looking, we got a wireless phone here.
Mm-hmm.
And I got Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on the thing. So we've got a wireless everything. So we're being bombarded by this stuff.
Plus we have a tower not too far away.
Yeah, not too far away, right? It is generally not appreciated. It's generally not appreciated that there is a cumulative effect on our bodies, and that taking on a cell phone for an hour a day for 10 years can add up to 10,000 watts of radiation. That's 10 times more than you get from putting your head in a microwave oven. My God, says Dr. Paul Roche, clinical professor of medicine and psychology at the New York Medical College. It's like 10 years of cell phone use is like putting your head in a microwave.
Other countries ban kids under 18 from using them.
It's probably a good idea. My ears are ringing. A two-minute call can alter brain function in a child for an hour, he says, which is why other countries ban their sale of discourage their use under age 18.
Well, we don't protect our kids at all.
Not at all. Age 18, that's certainly not the American way. We're starting kids out with Barbie phones at age 8. See how CTV cell technology breakdown has already affected our collective brains. There is no question EMF, electromagnetic fields, have a major effect on neurological functioning, writes brain researcher Eric Braveman, a contributor to the very juicy electromagnetichealth.com website. EMFs, slow our brain waves and affect our long-term mental clarity. We should minimize exposure as much as possible to optimize neurotransmitter levels and prevent deterioration of health. That's where I came into the picture, sitting through the world premiere of Full Signal, wishing it were clearer, sharper, better, but very happy to know it's available and part of an ongoing campaign to raise awareness. Can you hear me now? Alarming numbers of people, children are most vulnerable, are getting sick, not just here in the United States, but in hot spots around the globe. This isn't speculation anymore. It is science, says the public health doctors and researchers. Talal Jabrari, interviewed in 8 countries and 6 U.S. cities. He's a former 60 Minutes producer and really did his homework. I urge you to start doing your own homework. Meanwhile, power down when you can. Use the speaker or a non-transmitting ear device and take the wireless phone out of your bedroom. Don't let your community deteriorate into a toxic soup of EMFs.
We don't have a wireless phone in our bedroom.
Oh, but no. we have one in the computer room,
yeah.
In the studio, we have one. And we have one
downstairs,
of course. And that's kind of frightening stuff. Well, anyway, we're going to go to the interview.
Okay.
With Larry Dorman. And back with
that. Larry Dorman is from Council for AFSCME in New Britain, Connecticut, and he's the public relations guy, public affairs coordinator.
Yeah, for AFSCME Union. And we're going to play that now. It's about a little over a half hour interview. So
I hope you find it informative.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And I start this off with an introduction, a little intro music from Tom Waits, and so Larry is a Tom Waits fan, and so am I. So it's a Midtown Instrumental.
Changes and permutations, and that stretch of the imagination. And also, whatever comes out of the Senate would have to be reconciled with H.R. 962, or the House bill, which does call for the public option. And again, it's an option. It's not the sole source of health insurance for Americans. It's a public option. It also does not include the excise tax on higher-end plans. So, you know, am I happy about the Senate bill? No. It misses the mark in many ways. It tries to, the House bill is far preferable.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it all plays out.
What did you think about that, the idea of the Medicare buy-in?
It's an interesting, very, very interesting idea.
I kind of like that idea because I thought, well, if you could expand it to 55, down to 55, then maybe you could expand it down to 45, and then you'd finally have single, you know, and so forth. Then you'd finally have a single payer.
Well, and one of my, I wish the Obama administration and our supporters and the people in the Senate who support health care reform would make a more, would make a stronger and more convincing argument for what we tell a lot of our members, our union members, and our retirees, which is essentially we need to model health care reform on Medicare.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's essentially perhaps the model that we're talking about here. So I was intrigued, actually, by
that. Yeah, me too.
Because when you talk about Medicare, I think you're talking about a system, you know, that's essentially, it's a government-run, you know, national health care program, and it works. And I think that we ought to be taking that model and applying it to health care for everybody, under 65 and 62.
What do you think of having Joe Lieberman and Chris Dodd so prominent in this health care issue here? Isn't it just amazing that the two most...
I could say I was proud, but...
I felt the same way.
Certainly Lieberman is just... obviously, he's relishing his quote-unquote outsider role.
Absolutely.
He's not bringing a whole lot of constructive discussion to the debate. But he holds... and maybe the administration's giving him more power and respect than he really deserves.
Oh, he should have stripped his Homeland Security chairmanship right out from underneath him there.
Yeah, the problem is now it's that's so far in the past. We have to figure out how we move forward. And the Senate, being the kind of clubby atmosphere that it is,
mm-hmm.
it's hard for these for individual senators to do what they're doing, which is essentially obstruct reform. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I was concerned about the proposed bipartisan commission that they want to put together to look into Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
The bill that's been proposed by Kent Conrad of North Dakota and Judd Gregg of New Hampshire, one a Democrat and one a Republican. And, of course, Joe Lieberman is on that commission.
Right.
And would be. And Dianne Feinstein of California and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. And I think that could be pretty scary because that commission could make huge cuts in Social Security and Medicare.
Yes, it could. It's just amazing. Again, you know, this the reform initiative just morphed into all of these different arguments and discussions and debates, and it is so very complicated and so very far-reaching. But I kind of share your concern, just given the makeup of the commission, and oftentimes, you know, these commissions are set up to avoid actually legislating something into reality. That's why I think we're in a very strange and, you know, precarious and fragile state, and we'll have to see how it plays out. But again, that's why I don't. Obviously, I'm concerned about what I see coming out of the Senate, and ask me, our union is concerned, because again, you know, we want comprehensive, real reform that extends coverage to Americans who don't have it, and then preserves the best parts of our uniquely American system, and fixes those parts that aren't working. And I just think we're kind of a long way away from reaching that. that ideal, but people are working, and again, I think the House bill brings us a lot closer.
Now, help me a little bit with this. You say AFSCME strongly opposes this proposed commission. What would they do if they, what do they do, what kind of actions do they take to obstruct this and prevent this from happening?
I want to be clear. The more problematic pieces of the legislation right now would be the, and again talking about the Senate bill, would be the absence of a public option, a public plan that would be administered by the federal government to provide health insurance to Americans. That piece of it is very important, and also making sure that we don't emerge with a bill that taxes benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are really the kind of the key pieces of what we're talking about in terms of what our major concerns. So to answer your question, we're working on many different fronts. We're part of the Healthcare for America Now coalition. We've been airing TV spots around the country.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing grassroots lobbying both in Washington and when our congresspeople are home. Generated hundreds of thousands of phone calls, letters, emails. We just had an event last week in the Frigid Cold in New Haven where we had nurses, registered nurses who support health care reform, join our executive director, Sal Luciano, outside Yale New Haven Hospital. So we're doing a whole lot of grassroots activity to send a message both to the public and to our members of Congress that this is an issue that's near and dear to our hearts, and it needs to be done in a way that benefits all working people. So
did that get any?
I hope that answers your question, but that's what we're doing. We're just working our tails off to get the message out at the grassroots level. We, for instance, just organized a health care reform phone call with Joe Courtney, from the 2nd District. We're going to be doing one with Representative Chris Murphy as well, where our members were able to ask questions about and hear some of their concerns about the bill. And Congressman Courtney is terrific on this issue. We answered questions very eloquently. Our national union, AFSCME, actually hosted what we call webinars.
Mm-hmm.
On the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of December, we had 3 2-hour call-ins and webinars for our members to ask questions of AFSCME's policy experts. So we're really trying to win hearts and minds in Congress up on the Hill and here in Connecticut with our members and with the public. So it's a lot of work.
Oh, I'll bet. And this takes place all across the nation, not just in Connecticut.
What can we do as a program here to push this cause any more than we do?
Wow, there are so many things you can do, but obviously if you go to council4.org, we have a whole section on healthcare. But I think the most important thing you can do, quite frankly, your listeners can do, is to not just once, but repeatedly contact Senators Dodd and Lieberman. Right now the bill is in action in the Senate. It's, the House version is done. I think that's the most important thing would be to make repeated calls and letters. My understanding is when you email Senator Lieberman's office, you're going to get just a form response. So
mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they're looking closely at it. And obviously, many of our members are bringing a message that Lieberman's probably not interested in hearing. Nonetheless, the most immediate and helpful thing people can do would be to contact Senators Dodd and Lieberman.
I got to ask you, Larry, who is Lieberman serving at this point? I mean, have you seen enough support for Lieberman in Connecticut
apparently right now he has enough to continue doing what he's doing. I mean,
he's a Republican.
Whether we like our elected officials or not, they do run in this democratic system, and with the help, obviously, of Republicans.
I was just curious he's not responding to anything that a Democrat would be
I think essentially, I mean, to answer your question, I think he is utterly guided by his own self-interest.
Yeah, I think so.
If the common or the greater good is of any consequence or interest to him, maybe that's a personal opinion. But you know what? If he hears from more people, I did want to say a couple of things. If I can make a quick plug, we have a toll-free number, by the way, which I neglected to give your listeners. But if you want to call Senators Dodd and Lieberman's offices, now obviously you have listeners in Massachusetts,
yeah, sure.
So they need to call their senators. But this line works whether you live in New York or Massachusetts or Connecticut. It's 888-460-0813. And again, it's 888-460-0813. And, you know, one thing that's very powerful, a tool that's very powerful, would be for listeners to put information on their blogs, on blogs and news blogs, and send letters to the editor, particularly to the community papers. I don't know how many conversations I hear, you know, can be in the supermarket where people say, I don't want socialized medicine. Well, this isn't socialized medicine. This is a complicated, complex piece of legislation.
Yeah, those same people might be on Medicare, right?
Exactly. They're benefiting from
the
program.
It's
but, you know, nonetheless.
The most people I've ever encountered. The most stupid argument I've ever encountered. Are you still there? Damn. All right, hang on one second. He's disconnected.
Leo had a little problem with the phone, so it's been disconnected. And he will recall Larry. And in the meantime, one of the things, the questions that I have for Larry is Hoffa, is James Hoffa, has called for the return of the wall of protectionism, which I think is an interesting thing. And I wanted to ask Larry about that. You back with us, Larry?
I am back.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you about Jimmy Hoffa's thought on of protectionism. He wrote a little article that I think you featured. The Chinese government makes a point to buy Chinese products. If you want to do, and I'm quoting from the article, if you want to do business in China, you build a plant in China. The same is true of Japan and South Korea. They put their countries first. Congress now has a chance to get our trade policy right and rebuild America's manufacturing base. It can enact the Trade Act of 2009, sponsored by Mike Bouchard, a Democrat of Maine, and Senator Sherrod Brown, a Democrat of Ohio. What do you think about that?
I read that piece, and I loved it.
I think it's great.
I expressed a lot of the concern and the frustration that working Americans have. This system, and again, nobody has ever said we're against trade. You know, what we want is to see fair trade, not free trade. And I think that Hoff is simply calling for the restoration of some common sense principles that that do protect our way of life, our right to earn a decent living. It just defies the imagination to see what's going on, to see all of the industrial and manufacturing jobs that have left this country. It hasn't seemed to have benefited ordinary working Americans. Do you guys agree? I mean,
yeah. Well, my opinion is this on this. I swear, if there's a company that's buying stuff from overseas or outsourcing their work to other companies, then they should be boycotted. At least boycotted and made known that they're doing it, so people cannot buy their products.
Well, they shouldn't have tax. They shouldn't have tax breaks in this country.
Well, of course, they shouldn't have tax breaks in this country.
But I think it starts with the government. If the government is buying jets or airplanes or engines, they should buy it from American companies, not buy it from European companies or Chinese companies.
To me, the biggest insult that ever to this country was the presidential helicopter was made in Britain.
Right.
I mean, what the hell?
I've got a worse one for you. I mean, you have American flags
being made in China.
China. I mean, it just, you know, it just goes on and on and on and on. And again, I think it cuts to the issue of all of this trade legislation. Who's it really benefiting?
Right.
Has the movement to free trade benefited ordinary working Americans? Well, when you look at all the shops that have been shuttered and closed down, all the jobs that have been.
Yeah, it's horrible.
The misery index of workers overseas, workers across the border in Mexico. you know, I think it's pretty hard to argue that the system is working. So, you know what, if this is what we're calling it, if Jimmy Hoffa is calling it, I don't know, you know, if you want to call it protectionism, so be it. But
that's what it is, yeah.
I want to, you know, to remind, there's a really good example close to home. The AFL-CIO, the national AFL-CIO, they have a collective bargaining department that puts out all kinds of bargaining-related news and research. And, you know, the Machinist Union here in Connecticut has been fighting Pratt & Whitney. They want to close their Cheshire
right.
plant. They've been sending jobs steadily overseas. And they've been shipping jobs overseas despite getting all kinds of incentives from the state of Connecticut. So that kind of speaks to what you just brought up, Lila, which is, you know, what are we doing here? I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah, why are we subsidizing companies that are taking money away from American workers?
Right.
Yeah. In fact, we should be penalizing
I think they should
fine.
Be penalized
they
should
for that. Fine for that.
I agree. And again, you know, you're taking away somebody's job. You're taking away jobs from the surrounding communities in these plants. And again, I think all you're doing is creating it's a misery index, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where if the benefits of this so-called free trade were so broad-based, then we'd see workers in other countries improving their standard of living. You know, we'd see improvements globally. We're not seeing it. So,
but we're not the only.
We're seeing precisely the opposite. So the system just isn't working.
But we're not the only country either that's suffering. I just heard Germany is just their unions are complaining greatly because of some outsourcing of jobs from that country. They're losing a lot of jobs there, and that's all over that's all over Europe where unions are still reasonably strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but and they're complaining because this free trade has allowed you know their jobs to be traded off to third world countries. You know.
Yeah, and look, it is a global phenomenon. We
have a high standard of living.
Nobody is saying that we shouldn't be creating jobs mm-hmm. elsewhere. But again, you know, at what cost? Is it to benefit the executives?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Know, these companies and to benefit Wall Street, that seems to be the only place money ever goes these days.
And nobody complains.
Right.
I mean, nobody of any power complains that they're getting $100 million bonuses or
right.
$20 million bonuses. Or
well, they're all on each other's board saying, yay!
Yeah, right.
They're
you know, it's a small private club.
They're cheering all of this. And, you know, it's quite distressing.
I had to laugh. I don't know if you read this, but the last week, I think it was, the Goldman Sachs people are arming themselves because of all of their employees are arming themselves, and Goldman Sachs actually issued an okay for them to do that, all right, because of retaliation by average citizens who are you know
up in arms over their bonuses,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I mean, I thought that was a great article, but you know, that's what's happening.
Well, there is a groundswell, and I think, you know, sometimes I think these companies manufacture some of the hysteria to
mm-hmm.
be sympathetic and make it seem like people are, I think they want to create this image of an angry mob. You know,
they're being persecuted.
Yeah.
Well, I like what happened to Berlusconi the other day.
Yeah, I got the stuff.
Yeah. I mean, here's one flagrant madman, and yet you know, and he gets his teeth kicked in. You know, but it was a remarkable display because the last guy you expect.
The Italians have passion.
Oh, I guess, yeah. What did he hit? He hit him with a Statue of Liberty or something. Some kind of a stack, you know, with
a handy object.
You know, maybe it's good that it's spreading globally.
It is.
Yeah.
Larry, I believe that. I honestly believe that.
There are times when you shouldn't be polite, I think. I'm not advocating that we do
that.
Well,
again, I think that
exactly.
in many ways, too, that, you know, I think people are getting frustrated. They're angry.
Mm-hmm.
They're confused. I think the global...
It's global, though. Yeah.
And in some cases, I think people are desperate.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a desperation to people. They don't know what they're going to do. So many folks are really suffering. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Copenhagen. That's kind of fallen apart. Have you noticed?
Interesting. What do you think?
Well,
do you agree with cap and trade, or do you agree with all that crap? Or?
Do I agree with cap and trade?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, again, I'm trying to process all of this. And, you know, my concern is that, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, I think we have, our country is in much better shape having elected Obama than McCain. And I think that 8 years of the Bush presidency absolutely, you know, drove this country into a financial and economic and military ditch. Everything that could have gone wrong was
just
wrong.
An abyss, yeah.
And Obama is just trying to, the Obama administration is trying to deal with this, you know, trying to deal with challenges on so many different fronts. And I think that I applaud the effort on health care reform. I'd like to see him pursuing jobs and economic stimulus. To answer your question, I'd like to see jobs and economic stimulus policies that are geared toward creating jobs here, that are geared toward extending and replenishing the unemployment insurance system, for example. I'd like to see the, you know, TARP money go to people other than the executives who helped get us in this mess.
Right.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
So, you know, there's a lot that needs to happen that isn't happening, and it makes you very concerned for our future, for our children, our grandchildren.
Well, I think what bothers me most is the total lack of interest from the White House about Iraq. It has no mention about Iraq.
Interestingly enough, this morning on the news, it just flashed over very quickly, and I didn't hear anything more about it today and didn't get a chance to look up anything, that apparently companies were allowed to bid on Iraqi oil contracts.
That's right.
And the United States was shut out.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
It was really bizarre. I was wondering, you know.
I need to look at that a little closer because I didn't quite understand.
Did you know anything about that? I didn't follow up on it. Did you see that?
No, I mean, you know, I think Leo just said it well. I mean, Iraq is not on the radar screen.
No.
No, period. So
it's almost as though they wrote it off, you know.
Worries like, about the, you know, contractors and deals and it's very, very.
I mean, we're spending in excess of $3 trillion. It was estimated that this Iraq war is going to cost $3 trillion.
And we didn't even get a lousy oil contract.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the absurdity of this mess is beyond the pale. I swear to God. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever anymore. It did to begin with, but even less now.
And the second biggest insult that I had, I don't know how you feel about this, was that I think it was Denmark gave $110 million.
Yeah.
And you know, gee, big lot of money, $110 million. That for war effort, and that pays for 110 soldiers. Because it costs $1 million a soldier.
The war in Afghanistan.
That was their contribution.
Yeah, it's $1 million a soldier now, is what it's called.
I mean, that's like
coalition of the willing.
Yeah, that's like spitting in the wind. I was so insulted. I'm against this war totally.
To your credit, have been you've been speaking out about it on your radio and TV shows from the get-go. So I give you a lot of credit for that. And you know, it's just that the attention and focus have shifted over to Afghanistan. And again, I don't want to sound like I have my head in the sand, or that as a spokesman for AFSCME in Connecticut, that we have our heads in the sand. The war concerns our members, and we have a lot of veterans.
Absolutely.
Opposed to it, we have a lot of members who are serving currently. They are members of their family are deployed who support it. So I don't want to. You know, I'm not looking to.
No, but there should not be
on either side of the camp. All I'll say is that President Obama campaigned on extricating our country from these messes that Bush-Cheney created.
Right.
And it's going to be very hard to move forward with the jobs and economic stimulus programs and health care if we're still mired in these, if we're still in these quagmires that are costing human lives and just, you know, pillaging our treasury and our ability to save for the future. So,
I think what surprised me, and I don't know if it surprises you, but I believe it's at right now we're almost 40% of the jobs. 40% of the economy in this country is government, is by the government. All right.
And I don't know quite what to make of that. I mean, again, I'm a big believer in having, you know, strong and vigorous government spending. I believe that in an economic crisis, government spending is absolutely needed because businesses aren't spending. The big guys are looking to cut their own deals. Small businesses can't afford, in many cases, to hire people. The stimulus for spending and for providing services, whether
right.
it's roads, bridges, infrastructure, public safety, education, job training. The federal government is uniquely positioned to help with that. So I'm not necessarily, I don't know what to make of that number. I believe that federal and state government spending are going to be the only way to keep this thing from getting worse. Because
what I don't understand, maybe you can correct me on this, but the SBA loans,
yeah.
right, the SBA is guaranteeing, should be guaranteeing loans by the banks. The banks aren't making loans. And why is that happening?
That seems to be part of the problem.
But even under SBA guidelines, I mean, those monies are guaranteed back to the bank.
And, you know, Obama was holding one of his summits with the bankers and the financial people to say things have to start loosening up. Got to start lending money to people who actually need it and can use it. So,
For me, the SBA loans should be a no-brainer.
Approaching the new year with a lot more questions than answers. That's
right. Yeah, for real.
And I hope that people would think about if we could get out of these wars, health care would be paid for.
Yep. And,
you know?
We'd have jobs.
That's right.
Domestic front. We'd have a lot. I think our country would be in a far better.
We'd be balancing the budget. I mean, the budget would be virtually balanced. We'd probably have a surplus.
I personally don't feel that it's America's role to be the policeman of the world. And I was upset with Obama's speech.
Yeah.
Because I felt that was the tact he's taking.
Yeah,
and I also was very upset that he took Martin Luther King's words and used them in a way that Martin Luther King didn't mean them at all.
And I was in a very difficult position, and I do understand that, and I do. I voted for this man. I want him, and the country needs him to succeed. But I'll agree with you that I don't see how we can move forward on any front. And he probably would say the same thing, that
He's saying he wants to underwrite the entire security of the world, for crying out loud.
That was a very upsetting speech to me.
Because I
see all the problems that we have domestically.
It does, it sends, a definite signal. It sends a definite signal that we're in this for a while. I just don't know how we get out of it.
I don't either.
Well, there's only one way to get out of it, and it takes some guts to do it.
Bring those troops home.
I don't see Barack Obama doing anything with it. His speech was so blatantly, it was insane. I mean, to think that you could actually tell the world in front of a Peace Prize conference, okay, that we were going, that the United States is going to underwrite the security of the entire world?
Right.
I mean, what kind of a freaking moron is that for a president? There's not one president in the world in our history who's ever said we're going to underwrite the security of the world. You know?
Right.
That was a bit disappointing. I was looking for an entirely different kind of speech.
I mean, we're going
to... I personally don't feel that our role in the world is to be the policeman of the world. First of all, if we do become that, there will be no improvement in the living standards of the American people.
Absolutely not.
There'll be no chance of any of these things happening for us, I don't think.
And I think that just brings us back to what we were saying. It's going to be very hard to achieve health care reform, create jobs, stimulate the economy, get things moving in a positive way.
It's going to be a war mentality, Larry. I mean, it's a wartime mentality continually ever since they started.
That's why I don't really understand this man. He says how he wants to pass health care, which I would like to see. But on the other hand, he makes these other statements that to international audience, which is very frightening to me.
Yeah, and I think Leo said something that's very instructive. You know, we don't hear about Iraq anymore. I think that there's a tremendous amount of, for lack of a better word, fatigue you know, on the part of the American public. So I think that...
Do you think that Iraq has been handed over to, like, private security firms, that American soldiers are being moved out of there and private security firms maybe are being moved in? I think he's probably using more of that. But anyway, that keeps willing people employed. I don't agree with it.
But again, we're bogged down.
We sure are. And you know what, Larry? We've come right to the end of our time. I can't believe it.
Fine. I enjoyed this.
Well,
a lot of robust conversation never hurt anybody.
I'm going to go listen to some Tom Waits now.
Larry, you have a great holiday.
I really appreciate the support you've shown AFSCME and having us on, and I'll look forward to talking to both of you in January, and I really
great.
Want you guys.
Well, AFSCME does great.
Happy holidays.
We'll keep in touch on Facebook there.
We will do that, okay?
All right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Right,
good night, Larry.
Good night.
And Leo, you have identification.
Yeah, WQQQ103.2.
Okay, that's the end of that show, and I want to thank Larry for being on. And thank everybody for listening. And tomorrow night we have, we will be doing a further reading, possibly of a spiritual nature. I want to thank everybody for joining us. And good night.